good evening. Welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Online here and on the air every night until 1 o'clock on the East Coast, 10 p.m. here on the West Coast, and we're very happy to have you with us. I was going to do a whole different thing, but I saw something here that has just blown me away, and I want to just, it's not a big thing, but it's if you've been reading the books that I've been reading, and if you've been as steeped in this thing as I have been, I think it's pretty big news.
Now, I'm asking you, ladies and gentlemen, excuse me, this is Margaret Gray.
Yes, this is Margaret Gray.
Because I noticed you don't introduce us.
I'm sorry, Margaret Gray is here, Bud.
Hey, how you doing?
And Robert?
Yeah.
What?
Well, I am very concerned that you're going to get a tiger by the tail here.
Okay, is this the whole thing with Scientology?
Yes, the whole thing with Scientology. You know what those people do. You know what they're capable of. And you've decided to jump right into the fray, haven't you?
I'm not jumping into the fray. I'm just reporting something, which is my not only my right, but my duty. My duty.
Ladies and gentlemen, Phil Hendry is about to start. He's going to start talking about Scientology and what scum they are.
No, I didn't say that.
Well, you've got the Tom Cruise story, don't you? Well,
this is important news. This is big. I would think that if you...
Yeah, Mr. Hendry, you just went, this is big. I thought I'd let you know.
Thank you very much, Bud. I need that information. Thank you.
Well, I mean...
You did go, this is big. It makes you sound hysterical.
You know, I would think you'd find this to be very important. Tom Cruise has been deposed, ladies and gentlemen, in a lawsuit that is taking place against the Church of Scientology. This is a lawsuit that is big. It's being filed by the wife of an ex-member, not an ex-member, an ex-Sea Org guy. He was one of the heavy hitters in the organization, a big, big man.
In the organization. Now you make them sound as if they're a mafia family. You're going to have some Scientology goon kick down these doors.
Hold on. No, I don't think so. I'm not doing anything here that's even close to what some cats do. Like, I mentioned Tony Ortega to our pre-show audience.
Oh, great. Get him in trouble.
Tony Ortega's got a column, okay? I mean, the guy writes about this stuff all the time. He has a blog called Underground Bunker, which is about Scientology. Marty Rinker is a former Scientology Sea Org member. He writes a daily or quasi-daily blog, semi-daily blog, not semi-daily, I guess, every so often blog, that is also quite a bit of journalism, I think, in terms of the truth. But here, we just let me say this, please?
Fine, but I'm just telling you, you're setting yourself up for those Scientology goons.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, the goons come around.
Will you knock it off with the goons? Where'd you hear that term?
The Black Keys.
The Black Keys?
Yeah.
Who are the Black... Is that that band that we follow? Anyway, that ain't the Black Keys, man. That's a different band. The Tom Cruise likens his career as an actor to a soldier away from his family in Afghanistan, according to a court deposition obtained by TMZ. Now, that's not the big news. That's kind of a... It's a headline that TMZ believes is the real grabber, like he's disrespecting soldiers or something. But the one that I found to be even more pivotal, and it does merit its own headline and does have its own headline, in point of fact, it has its own story here. Tom Cruise admits Katie Holmes left to protect Suri, their child, from Scientology.
So?
So? Let me explain something, okay? Tom Cruise and the guy that runs Scientology, a guy by the name of David Miscavige, are very tight friends. They're very tight friends. They hang together. They go whatever the hell they do. What do you think two good-looking guys who are built and 40, late 40-something and are handsome and have money, what do you think guys like that do? I mean, what, parasail, jet ski? They fly to Rome to fight lions in the Colosseum? Who knows, you know, anything they want? These two guys hang out together. What?
Well, I would think that they, yes, do all of that and have a great deal of influence. They're probably very exciting to be around, probably terribly, terribly exciting.
Yeah, okay, fine. Thank you, Margaret. I don't want to know all of that. What I'm trying to tell you is these are two guys that move the world a little bit. Maybe as much as some, maybe not as much as others, but they move the world. You know, they've got the bread, they've got the influence, they've got the mass appeal, so on and so forth. Now here comes his friend, Miscavige's buddy, Tom Cruise, who is deposed in this trial. And this is a September 9th deposition. So understand something. This was kept under wraps for quite a long time. 2.5 months. Nobody got Hyde nor Herodis, man. Nobody got even a whiff of this. He confessed that Holmes, Katie Holmes, his ex, dumped him to spare their daughter, Suri, now 7, from the, in the words of the Daily News, sect. And also admitted that he only saw his daughter 10 times between the middle of June and Thanksgiving. The admission was sparked by a $50 million lawsuit accusing Life and Style and In Touch magazines of defaming him in 2012, claiming he'd abandoned Suri. Okay, so that's not the lawsuit against Scientology. That's something else.
Yes, this is an entirely different lawsuit having to do with the defaming of Tom Cruise. Your little Scientology lawsuit, Phil, has got nothing to do with this, and that's what I'm saying.
No, that's not what you're saying. You didn't even know what I was talking about.
Gil, you're talking about something else and everything.
Yes, that's great, but wow. You know,
what?
You're talking about something else and everything. I don't even understand the what dialect that is, man.
You're talking about a Scientology lawsuit, and Tom Cruise ain't.
Let me tell you something, my man. It all fits together just beautifully. This cat just came out with a statement in this deposition, just made public, that is probably going to bother Miscavige. And I'm not saying that Cruise is himself trying to offend the guy, but he's going to be offended. This guy, Miscavige, you got to understand something, folks. This cat, in books that have been printed, in books that are available out there in the world, has been accused of assault. I'm telling you, he's been accused of beating up people. In the church there, whatever the hell, you know.
Well, what do you mean?
I mean that he comes out of his office and finds a guy. Imagine working somewhere and a guy, your boss comes out of the office, finds you and says, "You screwed up that project." Yeah, bam, just belts you, or strangles you, or something like that. That's what they're saying this guy does. I mean, it's a weird, weird organization. Let's face it. But hey, I got nothing against it. Anybody want to do their thing? That's fine with me. The thing that bothers me, as I've said, is that they're tax-exempt, they got tax-exempt status, and they got it real, they did it by way of just muscling their way into the offices of the IRS and the Treasury Department, and then they conducted this espionage campaign. Are you aware of this?
What are you talking about? Are you talking about Scientology?
Yes. In the late 70s, they went in, they had people go into U.S. government offices and steal documents. This is a matter of record.
Scientology.
Yes, they conducted espionage against their own government, American citizens, against their own government. And why? Because people were saying bad things about them. Because some lady wrote a book, The Scandal of Scientology, because they don't like being criticized.
Well, this is what I'm saying. And so you're opening your big mouth tonight. And the next thing you know, Phil, you'll be out. They'll be followed. These goons.
Here we go with the Scientology goons. Anyway, so this lawsuit down in Texas, which alleges harassment. Marty Rathburn, a former member of Scientology, and his wife were sitting at home one night. They hear a knock on the door. They open it up, and there are these people there yelling and screaming and talking through bullhorns and basically accusing him of all kinds of stuff, just basically camping out on his doorstep, harassing him. And this continued for a while until finally they filed this lawsuit. And they've deposed all kinds of people. And they're going to continue to depose people. They want to depose Cruise. They want to depose the guy that runs the thing. Now you got this lawsuit by Cruise against Life and Style and In Touch magazine. And guess what? He's been forced to make a statement in the deposition, which just puts them in decidedly negative life, Scientology. She took her kid, Katie Holmes took her daughter, Suri, and left Tom Cruise because she didn't want the kid being turned into a Scientology robot. Yeah, I know, Margaret. Really hard to choose sides there between Holmes and Cruise.
How dare you? I would never sacrifice my self-respect, and I would never compromise my integrity that way. Tom, okay, so I paused, and now you think...
Yeah, now I think you're going to choose Tom Cruise.
Why wouldn't I? I've known... If I knew either one of them, it would be him. And so I feel loyalty.
Yeah, if you knew him, you don't know him.
You don't know that. Excuse me.
Yeah, your voice just went, you don't know that.
He doesn't know that.
Well, do you know Tom Cruise?
That's none of your business. But if I did, then I would be loyal to him.
What about if you knew Katie Holmes?
Not so much.
Anyway, we'll be right back, folks. What a ridiculous line of conversation. I thought I was... I'm the only guy making any sense around here tonight. Welcome to the show. Anyway, our number is 855-500-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, online at philhenryshow.com. More on this and that and a whole bunch of other stuff coming up. College football days. Wow. Hey, welcome back. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And we got David G. Hall is going to join us, and I guess I know why. What is it, man? He's afraid I'm going to get... He's afraid that I'm talking too much about the whole Scientology thing. I don't know. I think that there's a little bit of paranoia happening there. I don't think that just because a guy criticizes them, they got to pick their battles over there at the Scientology mother father computer headquarters. Man, they can't just take on every guy. Me, I ain't nothing to them. They're taking on guys that are former members, guys that are big players in the media. I mean. The guy that they tried to drive nuts, and they actually were successful doing it briefly, was a reporter named John Sweeney for the BBC. And Mr. Sweeney had done a documentary on Scientology a number of years ago. And they got him to lose it on camera, because what they did was they followed him everywhere. I guess he came out to L.A. and hung out at the Scientology...
Well, it's the celebrity. You know, you're talking far too... Mr. Hall wants to speak with you about this.
That's nice. I'll talk to him when I get around to it, okay?
Yeah, he's waiting on hold.
I don't care. What is it called?
The Celebrity Center. That's where the celebrities go. So Scientology has a place where celebrities can go and not have to be around. It's not that they don't like regular people. It's that they... I belched and I kept it suppressed.
Thank you, but except you mentioned it, so...
Anyway, never mind.
Well, no, go ahead, Margaret. I mean, just because I mentioned the fact that you suppressed the belch, is that a negative thing?
Yes, because I said that... The point that I said I was going to belch and I didn't, and I should have gotten points for that.
Hey!
You want your ass kicked?
What?
Do you want your ass kicked?
No.
Don't be a smartass, bud.
The Scientology Celebrity Center is for the celebrity who gets off of a movie set, is tired, and needs to go and be plugged into whatever they do. And so, you can well imagine, Phil, you get off of a movie or a television set, you're exhausted, and you need to go over to the Scientology place.
Yeah, to get the Scientology.
To get the Scientology, see?
What does that mean, to get the Scientology?
I don't know, Phil. They go over there, and they plug into those two cans that they have. What are you looking at, bud?
I'm not looking at that, but it was funny when you said plug into two cans.
Oh, brother.
Boy, you are a mental midget from way back. You're one of the originals. So don't they do that?
You're asking me. I mean...
You read the books, Phil. You're sitting here, I read all these books.
Well, you're right. Yes, they do audit. You're right. It's called auditing. And you hold on to a couple of instruments that somebody said they look like asparagus cans.
What?
That's what someone said. But the point is, it's like a lie detector. So they ask you a bunch of questions, and they look at the E-meter, I think is what it's called, and they watch the reaction. And like a lie detector... They claim to be able to know if you're being honest. And as they call you on your bullcrap, especially when they bring up emotional things from your past, as they call you on your bullcrap, you begin to recognize your bullcrap, you deal with it, and the meter eventually is not supposed to move, and that's what's called going clear.
So you realize that you're full of crap.
Exactly. Going clear is realizing you're full of crap. Yeah, that's the best way I know how to say it.
Well, that's...
Yeah, anyway, David Hall is with us, David G. Hall, our Vice President of Syndication. David?
Yeah, look, it's your show. What I'm trying to say is, I think what Margaret's been trying to say, what Bud is trying to say, a lot of us are trying to say, it is your radio show, but you are beginning to go into areas where I can't protect you if you get these Scientologists mad at you, because what they do is they go to your house and look in the window and do things to make you nuts, you know?
I've heard about them harassing people, yeah. But what about what I just said?
What?
I said that I'm not that big of a fish for them to care about. I'm another guy doing a talk show. That's all. Just another guy doing a talk show. They got far, far more formidable opponents, I think, in the people that have written these books. What about them?
Now look, they got enough money. You just said Scientology's got enough money to go after anybody they want. And they got enough money to go after everybody. You know, I wouldn't be surprised that after Cruz slipped up with a deposition at least got leaked about him saying, yeah, Katie had to get away from Scientology. They're probably going to start to go around to his house, and I don't know what they do. They set bags of cat turds on fire or something. It sounds juvenile.
They don't do that.
Well, what do you mean they don't do that? I've heard that they do those kinds of things.
They don't set bags of cat turds on fire, no. They don't do that. They'll camp out in front of your house sometimes. They'll have big signs that say you're a turd, you know, you're a no good guy.
That's what we're worried about, that they'll be harassing our broadcast facilities here.
See, I don't need that. We don't want them out there, you know, going up and down. Phil Hendry is a pile of soft cow dung. Phil Hendry's this and that, or whatever they. And
well, what's wrong with that, man? I think that'd be great. We could drag the microphone out there and have ourselves a real party.
Oh, yeah, great. So we can hear as you lose your temper and you beat one of them up, because that's what's going to happen. See,
what do you mean I lose my temper?
They're the ones that come around to harass, right? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All they're trying to do is get a reaction. And if you turn around and you beat one of them up, now they got their lawsuit. Now they can basically shut you down. And that's what they're looking for when they send people out and call people names and let off smoke bombs and all the stuff that they do.
I don't know where you're getting the smoke bomb thing, man. I know that, as I said, they have signs. They often picket. They often use bullhorns and that kind of stuff. They confront people. They do that this method where they, you know.
Well, I've seen that on the videotapes, David. They walk right up to someone. They go, "What are your crimes? What are your crimes?" Have you seen that?
Yeah. It's very intimidating. They'll walk right up to you and ask you what your crimes are. You know, I know you haven't committed any crimes, Phil, but people are nervous. And so when you say, "What are your crimes?" and you may go, "Well, I raped a man," and you don't mean it.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, you don't know if you're nervous.
Have you ever known anybody to say or do something like that?
Yes, when I was coming over the border from Mexico and I was with Daphne, we've been down there buying these big clay pots that we want to put out in the yard. You know, they're a lot cheaper in Tijuana. We're coming over the border. Guy says, "You an American citizen?" "Yeah." "Have you got anything to declare?" And I just blurted out, I don't have any heroin. I don't know why I said it, but I knew I was nervous.
What did you do?
I said, "Hey, Daphne, get a load of him." He didn't.
"Hello, Peggy."
The butter is in the refrigerator. I said, okay, that when the guy at the border, you know how they say to you, "Are you an American citizen?"
"Yeah."
"All right." He said, "Are you an American citizen?" I said, "Yeah." Then he goes, "What have you got to declare? Anything to declare?" And I said, I swear to God, I don't use a dildo on myself," or something like that.
What, David, that is, that's ridiculous. I mean, what made you want to say that?
The guy's making me nervous. He's a border patrol guy who can go under your car, who can look for stuff.
And not find it if it ain't there.
Well, I don't know what somebody's, you know, you go down to Tijuana and there might be a guy down there on the street that you didn't buy an iguana from or one of those Aztec calendars, and he gets pissed off, crawls under the car, tapes some weed to the bottom of it, and then calls ahead to the border station.
Boy, you talk about paranoid, man. You're really coming up with some interesting scenarios there.
Well, I mean, all I'm saying is that I don't, you know, let's forget about me for a minute, okay? If that Scientologist guy comes up to you and says, "What are your crimes?" and you blurt out, "I love to give it to a, I wanted to give it to a cat so bad," and you don't mean it, but you're so nervous, then they take that and they put that on the Scientology report or whatever the hell they got. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much, David.
Oh, I get it. So I'm not even connected to reality.
Not tonight. No, you're not. Thank you very much. Oh, I get it. So I'm not,
Well, you got it. He's just giving you a worst-case scenario.
Yeah, that's the worst-case scenario, Mr. Henry. I got news for you. That is definitely a worst-case scenario to the point where it's out of the realm of possibility. I'm not going to blurt out, "Oh, I really want to give it to a kitten." Look, no matter how nervous you are, no one can be so nervous that they just fictionalize, although there is such a thing as false confession.
There you go. That's exactly what I'm talking about. False confession.
What's that?
That's when someone gets so nervous they go ahead and confess to something that they did not do, and that's a matter of fact.
It is. It is. It is a matter. It seems incredible, but we now know that people sometimes feel so pressured by the police in an interrogation, they'll go ahead and admit to a crime they didn't commit. No, that's not going to happen to me.
Oh, so now you know about false confession. If they asked you, did you have sex with poultry? Never mind.
Why wouldn't I laugh at that?
Because you're a child, Phil.
Why wouldn't I laugh at that?
Because you're a man. So that's...
Anyway, we'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. College football news coming up. World-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. Visit us online at philhendryshow.com and get a backstage pass so you can watch our live streaming video of this show, listen to 5,000 hours of some of the greatest radio ever made, some of the finest podcasts you'll ever hear, some of the grooviest and most perfect people that you'll ever meet, some of the most handsomest kind of guys that you will ever... Well, I don't know. I'm one guy. Anyway... Head on over and get a backstage pass. Now, what do you get? I just said 5,000 hours. You also have the daily videocast. You also have the daily podcast. You also have our classic podcast. And all the other features, including our now Saturday bonus shows that we're going to be creating as need be. Now, I made the announcement today. If for whatever reason we are not on the air during the week, because, for instance, Monday is Veterans Day, and we would not be on the air for any holiday that is national in scope, Christmas, etc., we will be doing bonus shows on our videocast as well as our podcast. So backstage it, man. And also, while you're there, go to our online shop, philhendryshow.com, with our online shop hats. I'm wearing one tonight here on the videocast. This is the Phil Hendry cap. We have the Ted's Beverly Hills hoodie, all that stuff, philhendryshow.com. It's just the right thing to do, man, nowadays. You know, when you have a business, you just got to do the right thing, and that is make as much money as you possibly can because, you know...
They're sure not going to pay you.
That's pretty much it. All right, Professor Emery Clayton, I want to do, and we will momentarily, get on line here with either Don Mixa or Vernon Dozier on Saturday's college football games to watch. And I have Vernon, I have Professor Emery Clayton on line with us here, wanted to make a comment about Obamacare. But I wanted to ask you, Professor, are you watching any of the college games?
Phil, I'm probably not going to be watching any of the college ball game. You know that our school is a community college, and so we do not have the football program here that that four-year college would have.
Oh, I understand that.
But you're asking me that question. Why?
I'm asking you that question because I thought when I saw your name on screen, I thought you wanted to call in a comment on that. And then, Bud, hold on for a minute. I've got to turn something off here. I just had something pop up here audio-wise. I thought you were going to comment on that, and then Bud said you're calling in about Obamacare?
Yes, I'm calling in about Obamacare. You know, I would just hasten to say to my friend Phil Hendry, who I admire greatly, and I think Phil has been a very fair and even-handed host in the programs that I've engaged him on, because I'm black doesn't necessarily mean... I want to call in and say, now, let's hold the phone, because I want to talk about football. I'm a professor.
No, I know that, Professor, but please don't think that I was suddenly stereotyping you. Because I had gone into the break...
No, I'm a professor of urban studies, and I'm a professor of history at L.A. Canyon College. So I'm not going to be calling, and I would say, those are my credentials. Let me call up and talk about football.
I understand that, sir. I had just gone into the break saying that I wanted to talk about college football because we had some of the games lined up here. We wanted to discuss them. Then I saw your name come up, and I thought I made that connection.
And if you had seen, for instance, another man's name come up who was a white man, would you have automatically thought that...
You know, if you don't want to talk to me...
No, it's fine, Phil, but I'm a little bit on edge here because the reason why I call... No, but answer my question. If you saw that Dr. Ron Tarner there, he's a white man. He's a white man with a stuffed-up nose and a thing about Stephen Hawking, and I don't know what his problem is. If he called in, do you think he won't be talking about college football?
That's a very good question, Phil. I bet you're thinking, no, he wouldn't.
If I saw Dr. Tarner's name up there?
Exactly.
Probably not.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, Phil. You know, I admire you for your honesty, though. I really do. So here comes the colored man.
Oh, come on, will you? Give a guy a break. I had no idea that you were going to call up about anything other than this. I saw your name pop up as soon as I had mentioned it. Tarner is not going to be a guy that comes to mind when it comes to football because he doesn't know anything about anything. He's admitted. He lives in his observatory. He's got his house, his son, and his science, and that's it. I wouldn't think of him relative to anything other than the fact that, like you said, he hates Stephen Hawking. He writes jokes, and he looks through his telescope and thinks he's a doctor of other things, which he isn't.
Well, you know, you're very, very crafty, Phil. I like you. I think you're a funny guy and an intelligent guy, but you're very crafty. Very, very crafty. I'm going to let it slide this time. But
I don't think there's anything to let slide.
Phil, just let it go. The professor is being magnanimous.
There you go, right there. I'm being magnanimous, and if I were you, I would accept my magnanimity, and I would not push it, because I've called up about something here that I think you're going to find very interesting. I'm talking to, just as Mr. Henry believes, that if he had a white doctor call in, by heaven, he's not going to talk about football. He's going to talk about stargazing or some other nonsense. But
I've already addressed this, Professor. I don't think it's fair.
All right, you sit and you think that you've been treated unfairly, but I want to say something. Today, I'm having lunch with my colleagues, and one of them is a very, very qualified, a very eminent professor working in anthropology here at L.A. Canyon College. And this woman said to me that she had her insurance canceled. She said, now, what do you think of that? Obamacare canceled me. And I said, well, that must be because it's junk. The insurance policy you have is junk. And she looked at me and she said, well, what do you mean by that? I said, the only reason why you're going to get canceled is if your policy is no longer in effect because it does not meet the minimum requirements of the law. She says to me, well, Obama lied when he said that we could keep our insurance. I said, no, he did not lie. He was assuming that people were going to understand that if a insurance plan is illegal, it's not going to be in effect. Do you really have to tell somebody, oh, you can keep your insurance, unless, of course, it's illegal? Because the plan is defined as to what it is, and an illegal insurance policy, one that does not give you the basic coverage that you're supposed to have, is illegal. Illegal.
All right, now, I'm going to interrupt you, okay?
Go ahead.
Well, sorry, you know, but I here's the thing I wanted to ask you. You know, what you just said is all true, but it's all extremely complicated.
Well, what I'm going to tell you is this, Phil.
It's all very complicated.
Yeah, what I'm going to tell you is this. I can't do anything about the fact that it's complicated. And you say it's complicated to understand that some insurance coverage is no longer legal in the United States of America because it's designed only to steal money from people and not really give them any decent coverage. Now, I can't do anything about the fact that that's illegal, and I can't do anything about the fact people don't understand that. But that's a fact, Jack, as the man said in the movie, Bill Murray. Now, here's number two. This colleague of mine said, well, I lost my insurance, but they are rolling it over to another plan. And I said, I'll bet it's a more expensive plan. She said, yes, it is, and she's blaming Obama for that. I said, now, hold on. It's a more expensive plan because it meets the requirements of the law, and of course they're going to charge you more money for it, but here's the beauty part. You don't have to take that insurance. You can shop around for the same legal coverage, and you can get it cheaper. She said to me, you mean by using that website? I said, you can do that, or you can use an insurance broker, an insurance agent. Now,
there's an idea.
Yes, there are insurance agents that work as brokers as opposed to just working for one company.
That's exactly correct. There are insurance people that go out at the same way a real estate agent would, or anybody else. They're going to find you the best deal, and they're going to get. Now, I know that there's some of them that are working on commission because they're working for one company or another. You run into that when you're buying stocks and bonds. You have to do your homework. One of the things I think you said, Phil, is very, very right. Out of all the wrong things you've been saying on your show tonight, including the fact that here comes the colored boy, and
I never said those words at all, okay?
No, you didn't say those words, but that was how I was treated. I'm a professor of urban studies, and as far as you were concerned, I was wearing overalls and carrying a mop. And
well, that's not fair, Professor. Phil is not the brightest bulb on the tree, but I think he means well.
Well, okay.
Well, thank you very much for that ringing endorsement. Why don't you shut up? So
look, I don't want to sit here and referee some fight between Phil and the Walking Dead there. All I'm trying to say is that you don't like that line?
That's very funny.
All right, all I'm trying to say is this. If you want insurance, you can get insurance, and you can get insurance that you can afford, and you can get insurance that is comprehensive and that is going to be legal, and you can find it by way of, once they fix this website. Now, yeah, I'm going to give Obama all kinds of hell about that. That's just a messed up situation over there. But I'm also going to tell you that that is not the only way to go about finding affordable insurance. Like I said, they've got the, in the industry, they got these brokers. So I said all of this to this woman, this white woman I'm having lunch with. And she went back on the same old thing. She said, well, Obama can't. I said, didn't I just explain to you? And she said, Obama can't. So I got up, I took my tray of food, and I went outside with my tray of food. And I went outside, and I sat down on the cement right in the middle of the student quad on the ground like I'm, I guess, a snake charmer. You know, I'm just sitting on the ground with my food, and I'm eating it right off of my lap. I got the tray there. And the people come by, Professor, you all right? Why you say, why don't you sit in the teacher's lounge? And I said, because I've been made to feel as if I'm a third world swami trying to charm a snake out of a basket. I've been made to feel as if I'm just some guy selling a rug in a bazaar by this white woman that I was having lunch with who didn't understand Obamacare, and that because she's dumb, she's going to blame it on him. And because I couldn't explain it as good for her as I should have, she's going to blame it on me. So I'm just going to sit here on the ground as if I'm as if I've got leprosy or one of these people waiting for money outside a department store in Paris. See what I'm saying?
No, I...
That's a tough one to follow, Professor.
You know, Phil, work with me here. You know, I'm...
I'd work with you what, man? You're sitting on the cement outside?
Yes. I'm sitting outside on the cement because I feel as if I've been alienated by this white sitting inside who wants to blame Obama because she's dumb. So I couldn't take it any longer. I didn't want to have anything to do with the world she's in, including chairs, silverware, tables, buildings.
So you went outside and sat on the cement and ate lunch?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, and I'm proud of that.
All right, Professor, thanks very much. You got a break.
Yeah, I'll bet you got a break.
Why is that guy always pissed off?
I don't know, man. You pissed him off when you said about Obamacare.
I didn't say anything about it. I agree with him.
Well, you did something because he went outside and ate off the ground or whatever.
I didn't do it. The lady he was having lunch with, who apparently didn't understand that she could, when her insurance got canceled... Exact same thing happened to my ex, Maria. Her insurance got canceled. She then got all nervous and pissed off. They said they're rolling her over to another plan. She said, that's fantastic. They said, yes, but it's going to cost more. She got angry again. And we're having lunch today. I said, well, look, you know, you don't have to have that insurance. Get a plan that is affordable and that is also legal. You cannot have certain plans because they're junk now. And the plan you had for you and for her two kids, I said, that plan... It didn't cover you properly. Can you imagine if there'd been an emergency and you needed that plan to kick in for something that it didn't provide? I said, frankly, Obama's been doing a lot of people a lot of favors here, getting some of these policies canceled because they suck, because they ain't no good.
You're starting to preach again.
We'll be right back, folks. 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Sorry for preaching.
Well.
Norman, ooh.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Thank you very much, Professor Clayton and David G. Hall, a couple of guys that never pull any punches, man. They got no problem telling me what they think of me, and it ain't too good.
Well, don't start, you know.
Yeah, don't feel sorry for yourself.
I'm not feeling sorry for myself. I'm just telling you, you know. After a while, a guy gets tired of it.
Well, you got to have him on the show, then.
Well, you have to have David on. You can't not have him on.
Well, you know, maybe I won't. I mean, I'm just, after a while, a guy gets tired of being told, you know, he's an idiot and he doesn't understand. And I think I understand more than a lot of people.
But you're getting all offended and everything.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
Everybody tells me I'm stupid all the time. You know what I do? I laugh right back at it. Doesn't bother me at all.
Oh, yeah, you cry and everything.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Yeah, you do, man. Like, if I tell you you're dumb, how do you feel?
I don't care. Doesn't bother me at all.
This is very interesting. Go ahead, Robert.
You are dumb, man. You're the dumbest man I've ever known in my life.
I don't care.
Bud, you're so stupid that I'll bet you have to open the window and put your hand out to see if it's... Well, that's not stupid.
What?
If you put your hand out to see if it's raining.
No, that's not stupid.
I don't have to do that, though.
Why?
Because I can look and see if it's raining.
Good one, Bud.
All right, yeah.
Both of you, just...
All right, take it easy, all right? Everybody just,
You always say take it easy. You got to stop doing that. Stop saying take it easy, and don't take everything Mr. Hall said personally, and Professor Clayton have more respect for the fact that he's black.
Yes, sir. I don't have any disrespect for Professor Clayton because he's black, and you're right. I shouldn't say take it easy so much, and David Hall, you know, can pound it.
That's the spirit.
Thank you. If it is possible for the number one team in the nation to be flying under the radar, then that is what Alabama's been doing the past few weeks since opening its season with victories over Virginia Tech and Texas A&M, which was number six at the time. Alabama has been blowing out inferior opponents with increasing ferocity, outscoring its last six opponents by 246-26. Suddenly, the Crimson Tide are a given at number one, and the jockeying for number two has captured the attention of the college football world. Now, one of the things that I'd love to talk about, but I don't know if we'll have time, is just exactly what are these games that some of these teams are playing? Because, man, I can't even believe that these colleges, some of these programs, are even playing Division I schools, man. Now, I haven't seen the Alabama Crimson Tide schedule, but... I have seen the schedule of some of these other ball clubs, and, you know, they start, they're out there, they're kicking ass on really little schools or schools that really aren't all that, schools that want the opportunity to play you because that gives them a nice payday, but they're not, they're not powerhouses. And even here in this article, they say that Alabama's playing inferior teams. But here's the thing about Alabama. When they say that they're flying under the radar, man, those guys are never flying under the radar. If ever there was a team in the history of the world that everybody knows about, everyone knows every time something happens, good or bad, it's Alabama. Because that's it down there, man. On November the 5th, 2011, LSU handed Alabama its only defeat of the season. On November 10th, 2011, Alabama received its only loss that year, too, to Texas A&M. Both times, the Tide were able to rebound and win national titles. Now they face one of the biggest tests left on its schedule, although Louisiana State has two losses, and this is not a game of the century, as LSU's 9-6 win in 2011 was billed. The Tigers have been one of the few teams to enjoy success against Alabama.
Well, what do you watch these games?
I watch some of these. I watch the bigger games. I'm always looking, but there's so many teams in college football. I either watch the top 10 teams, or I don't watch at all because I'm not going to watch two unranked teams. I don't care that much about college football. I got to watch something that means something. So they got these games this weekend: Virginia Tech and Miami. Miami's 14th, but Virginia Tech isn't ranked. Houston and Central Florida. There you go. And Central Florida's ranked 19th. Houston, what is, I don't know. And then Nebraska and Michigan, neither one of those teams is ranked.
Well, I thought Nebraska and Michigan, those are two, I don't know anything about football. Doesn't Nebraska plays football, right?
Yes, Nebraska at Michigan.
Yeah, those teams are great.
They're not ranked this year.
What's that mean?
What do you mean, what does it mean?
When you say they're not ranked.
They're not ranked. They don't have a ranking.
Was that so they didn't win?
They're not winning enough to get ranked.
Well, how many wins do you have to have?
It's not about how many wins because the rankings are determined by a computer.
What? Man, wait a minute. In the NFL...
I know all about the NFL. I know how it's done in the pros. In college ball, there's so many teams, they can't do it that way, okay? They got to stick all this stuff into a computer, and then the computer says, what's up?
That's almost like in a Scientology, what you were saying about the mother-father.
What? Yeah, why is that any different from the mother-father computer?
the mother-father computer. What are you talking about?
That's what you called Scientology.
Scientology doesn't have a mother-father computer. I was just being ridiculous when I was talking about how everything there is so just, ooh, you know.
Well, what about college? Is anything there, ooh, or is it all just Scientology?
No.
Well, then why do they have a computer figuring things out? Why don't they play the...
Margaret, there's so many teams that they can't have a coherent ranking based on wins. There's just so many teams, and a lot of them don't play each other. One of the ways that you determine the strength of a team against another team, have they played each other? And so many of these teams have not.
They're going to have them all play each other then.
They can't because they only play 11 or 12 games a year.
Well, then why don't they play more?
Because it's college ball, and they got to study for their tests and all that crap.
That sounds baby. Either you get in and play or stay home.
Well, you know, you may be right. All right, we'll continue this just fascinating conversation here on the other side of our news break and the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We also have coming up, as I mentioned, Don Mixa and Vernon Dozier to talk a little bit about this. But we thought we'd kick things off with just this preliminary discussion of these messed-up games and the messed-up rankings. And thank you very much for mentioning all this stuff, you guys. You just confused me now. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't think any of it makes any sense if you have a mother-father computer.
It's not the mother-father computer is what I'm trying to tell you guys. It's a computer that feeds in... what is this?
Nice little country song.
One. But whatever, man. So the mother father, we'll be right back, folks. World famous Phil Henry Show. The mother father computer.
Yes.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Going down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. I am Ted Bell, and I'm going to join Phil for the next few minutes. We're going to talk something that I love. I love it dearly. It's called college football. Come on down. Watch a game at Ted's of Beverly Hills.
That's right.
Every night.
Put our meat in your mouth.
There you go. Every night we're down here. I'm in my office right now, Phil. If Phil Henry is there.
I'm right here, Ted. I'm sorry. I was just collecting. I was actually got a couple of good things up here on the computer screen so that we can take a look at this. I had a very interesting conversation. By the way, welcome, folks, back to the program. Ted Bell, one of our sponsors, is joining us here. People were asking about you, Ted. Said, where were you?
You mean on the radio show?
Yeah.
Oh, we have not been neglecting Phil Henry. For all the fans out there that enjoy the segments that I do on Phil's show, we have had some remodeling that we're doing at Ted's of Beverly Hills. I think people that come in to enjoy some of the juiciest steaks, some of the tenderest meat, and, of course, the Ted and the baked potato tree, the serrated steak knives, all the things that we developed, which, of course, our baked potatoes are wrapped in foil. What do you want? Hold on, Phil. I'm so sorry. What do you want? Park the cars around back. I told you. We have a lot of people coming in tonight, Phil, as sort of a pre-Thanksgiving festivities going on here in Ted's of Beverly Hills and the surrounding areas here in Southern California. And as a result of great advertising we've done on your program, we've got a lot of people coming in from out of the area. You know what I say, out of the area, suburban Los Angeles, and they're driving cars that, as you know, we have a policy on what we valet here and what we don't, and I've asked tonight and tonight only, if you show up in a truck or something, you know, that we don't really want to see anywhere around our restaurant, we will park it in the back.
Well, we need to get people to understand. You don't park trucks and you don't park old cars.
What we do is we like to keep up front, as any restaurant would, as I'm sure you've seen at the nicer hotels. Now, I know you drive a Jaguar, Phil, because I've gone places with you, and every time you valet that, they always park it up front because it looks all, you know, great and good for you. My BMW, for whatever reason, and I think it's because it is candy apple red, and I always wear a red baseball cap with the top down when I drive that.
Yeah, do you drive that BMW all the time?
Yes, I do, unless, of course, I've got Marcy's car, which is a black Mercedes, but I drive my red BMW, but I'll only drive the red BMW with the top down wearing a red ball cap.
And why do you do that?
Well, it's a signature statement. I think anyone that knows Ted Bell and they know Ted's of Beverly Hills, they know my signature moves. That's one of my signature moves, is what that is. So, you know, I would simply say that having said everything that I've said, at Ted's of Beverly Hills, you better believe this, that if I park my own car, if I see myself coming in, and this is kind of a weird way of putting it, but if I see myself coming in, I will have my car parked up front because I think my car looks good, and I will tell myself as I come in for dinner. I know that sounds very confusing.
Yeah, Ted, I think you can just simply say you like the look of your car and you would put it up front.
No, but I also am saying to Phil and to the audience, if I were a customer...
Okay, if you see a customer come in with a red BMW...
No, I'm sorry. It's been a busy... I'm in the office here. I don't want to go anywhere near the restaurant tonight. I'm in the office in the back because I can't go out there. I don't want to go... It's so busy and so hectic, and there's so many people coming in tonight that I don't want to see.
Like who?
Well, the Dooleys, you know. And,
oh, okay.
Oh, my God. Don't let her find out that you're avoiding her.
In any event, no, what I'm saying is, if I came in, not any red BMW, if some guy, you know, with all due respect, Phil, I love you, but if you came to my restaurant in a red BMW, I wouldn't park that anywhere near my restaurant. I'd send it down the street. I'd send you down the street to the public lot, and I'd say, I'm sorry, sir, I can't park that here. I won't do it. I can't have it. You park it over there in that public lot, and then you walk up here and get your drink and your steak, and then get out, because I...
And then get out? What kind of a statement is that?
I don't mean then get out. I'm sorry. I just... It's a hectic night, so I'm using a little bit of shorthand.
All right, so only a red BMW owned and driven by Ted Bell.
That's pretty much... Yeah. And I don't want to sound elitist, but I would not... I think the red BMW is good for me. I think it's a beautiful car, but if I don't see me in it, I hate it. You know what I mean?
Well, how can you see yourself in it, Ted? You're not talking about standing across the street.
No, but I see... When I see myself driving a red BMW, I can see myself as if I am standing across the street. Not inside of it. When I say I see myself in a car, I always want to see myself in a car as if I'm standing on the street and I'm driving by.
I got you. Okay.
All right, so you understand?
Yes.
Well, you sure? Because it sounds like you're sort of wanting to move me along like I'm making you nervous.
No. I do want to get into the football.
Gee, it is kind of weird, though.
Who said that?
Bud did.
Hey, Dickman, let me tell you something. The only thing weird around here is the fact that you got a job on the Phil Henry Show, okay? That's weird.
I'm just saying, you sitting there looking at yourself.
I'm not looking at myself. I'm imagining seeing myself.
You don't need to explain it, Ted. We understand. I understand, but I'm sure you understand if you think about it long enough, and you will. All right, now let's get into football. I know Coach Dozier is going to be calling us in a few minutes because we want to talk about the rankings, and I know that the Teds of Beverly Hills college football season is big. I know the Dunphy brothers have not been kind to you.
Oh, God, the Dunphy brothers are a couple of guys. I've known these guys since college, and they're both terrific guys. They're both in the insurance business. They come in on during the football season. I only see them during the college football season. They don't watch the pro games, but they always bet these college games, and they come into the prime rib room, which is of course our lounge, and they will spend. They come in at about 12:30, and we open the doors for lunch at 11:30. The Dunphy brothers come in at 12:30, and they sit, and we have all the games, Phil, because we've got the DirecTV satellite, and I've also got the old-school dish out back here that one of these days I'm going to auction this thing off. It's so everybody comments on it.
You got the old dish that pulls in all the signals the way they used to?
Oh, yeah. I don't mess with it anymore. Every now and again, Rudy will look at it and try to pull something in on it. But it was very squirrely, those satellite dishes, the way they used to be. DirecTV is great, and they've got a great complement of games. The Dumfies will come in here at about 12:30, and they park it at the bar right near that furthest television set we have over the bar at the south end.
Yeah.
They will park it there until 10, 11 o'clock at night. And I'm telling you this, and I'm telling you straight, I watch them drink from 12:30 until 10, and they never, ever look like they've had too much.
Are you kidding? These are the two guys. I wonder if I've seen them.
I don't think you have. I know Frank has. Frank knows them. But these guys are serious about their football.
Sounds like they're serious about their booze. I mean, they don't look inebriated?
No. They get a little exuberant, but there's nothing. I mean, when the games get tight and close, you know, they're jumping up and down and screaming and using all kinds of four-letter words. I had to tell them to calm down one Saturday, because we had a whole table full of people in from this local church. They'd had a big confab of some of these local church people, you know, very religious conservative Christian types, you know?
Yeah.
And there, we had an overflow in the dining room, so we were seating people in the prime rib room. And
you said prime rib room.
What?
You went prime rib room. Okay, bud. You know, Ted's racing a little bit.
I said, what did he just say?
He said you said prime rib room.
No, I did not say prime. Did I say that?
It's, you were racing a little bit. You probably, you know.
All right, well, okay. If I say, bud, it's prime rib room, then that's what it is. Okay?
I thought it was prime rib room.
It is prime rib room now, but when I said it was prime rib room, I changed the name temporarily to that. Okay? So I don't need you to comment anymore is what the point that I'm making here.
Well, I mean...
No. You don't need to comment anymore. I changed the name to prime rib room just to see if you could shut up, and you didn't. It was a test. So I may call it that again.
All right, Ted. We understand, all right?
What's this we? You got a rocket in your pocket or something? I'm talking to the brains over there.
Don't be cruel to him. He heard you say something. He likes to correct people. He does it with me.
Ted, that's very, very rude of you.
What's everybody jumping on me for all of a sudden? I'm trying to...
You know, Sam, I've had all kinds of people crying on this show. You going to be number 533 here this week?
What are you doing?
Let's take a break, okay?
Yeah, you do that.
Ted Bell is feeling upset because I yelled at him. How about that? World famous Phil Henry Show. We will be back right after these messages.
Ted's a Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Didn't do anything wrong.
Ted's a Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
This is Ted Bell, and thank you, Phil, for having me on the program. I've got a little upset there. I'd like you all to come down for college football. We've got the Ted's of Beverly Hills Ted's, and we have the baked potato.
You have the baked potato in tin foil, right, Ted?
Well, it's aluminum foil now. It's not tin foil, but essentially that's what we have. We invented that. I apologize for getting emotional, Phil, but I was trying to tell Bud something, and he jumped down my throat. You know, I run this restaurant, and I run my restaurant the way I run my life, and it's worked for me, Phil, and that is that everyone does what I tell them to do. And that may sound egotistical, and it may sound controlling.
It does a little bit. Does Marcy?
Marcy knows Marcy, I love my wife very much, and she loves me, and I've given her a great life. And in return, she gives me allegiance, her loyalty. I truly believe that Marcy, if anyone tried to hurt me, if anyone tried to hurt, obviously, our son, if anyone tried to hurt our son, I don't want to know, I don't even want to see the body after that, you know. I wouldn't even want to go near what happens to the guy that hurts our son after Marcy gets done with him. But if anyone tried to hurt me, I think she would be on them like white on rice. I think she'd be all over them like one of did you ever see the blob, how the blob grabbed a guy's, you know, it was on a guy's arm and turned it into a skeleton arm?
In the blob? Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, that Marcy would be all over a guy like the blob, just congealed, you know. So I think that in exchange for the loyalty that she gives me, I give her a great life, a beautiful home, a beautiful son. And that I think is the way to go in life. Now, the reason why I was talking about the prime rib room and the Dunphy brothers, Phil, is that we are going to be watching college football this weekend, and so I do have my rankings up here. If you wanted to ask me anything,
well, we have been looking at the rankings. As a matter of fact, I have them on Phil TV and HD. All right, you got. I want to ask you about Alabama. Alabama is number one. They're 8-0. And obviously, we had just read a story about them being, you know, the bad boys on the block. Tell me a little bit about Alabama.
Well, Alabama, like a lot of those Southeastern Conference teams, I think there's something that's not quite what meets the eye. Look, they beat up on a team like Colorado State. Now, who did Colorado State beat? Cal Poly, UTEP, Wyoming, and Hawaii. Woo! Boy, I'll tell you, that's some badass opponent there. Colorado State. They kicked the living crap out of Arkansas 52-0. This is how they beat Arkansas, Phil. 52-0, if you can believe that. Now, let's take a look at Arkansas's record. Well, let's see. They beat Louisiana Lafayette. That's a powerhouse. Samford, another powerhouse. Southern Miss. And then they lost to Rutgers. They lost to, now these are all ranked teams that they lose to, number 11 Auburn, number 1, but they lose big. I mean, they lost to Alabama 52, to, they lost to to Carolina, one of the two. It's either South or North. Which one's good and which one isn't?
They lost to South Carolina.
Okay, I mean, I just, you know, I'm just emotional tonight.
You know, Ted, I'm sorry to say this, but it sounds like you almost sound like a woman who's on her period.
Is that right?
Oh, man. Well, I, you know, that is ridiculous that he hangs up.
Well, it was also a comment that probably, it doesn't matter to me. I mean,
where'd he hang up?
He hung up because Margaret insulted him, I guess.
I did not mean that as an insult.
Well, I mean, you're saying you sound like you're on your period. Any man, you're going to feel very insulted by that.
He's right, you know.
Well, I'm sorry.
I mean, good Lord, Margaret, you know. And you know, Ted, he's got an ego the size of the world, you know. He thinks he's it in a bag of chips, so... he was saying some pretty interesting stuff there, though, I thought. South Carolina... beat up on Arkansas, 52-7. These are all ranked teams, but I think the point that he was trying to make is that you've got an Alabama football team, very good football team, nonetheless, an Alabama football team that has on its schedule, like a lot of these schools, real chump change lightweight ball clubs. You know.
Well, if they're all playing chump change lightweight ball clubs, then it is sort of...
Yeah, it's kind of equal, ain't it?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a point. You know, that's a point. I mean, if the playing field is equal in this manner, that you got a lot of big teams playing a lot of little teams, then, yeah, I suppose the playing field is equal. You know, we beat up Austin, PA, 52-0, and you beat up UTEP or whoever, you know, 52-7, so I suppose it's all equal.
Yeah, but those two teams, what are they ranked?
I think when you get down to what would be the ranking of an Austin PA overall in college football, it doesn't matter. I don't think that there's as much difference between these schools. Now, here's University of Central Florida. Do you know that I remember when I started my radio career in Orlando, Florida, back in 1973? And when I started my career in Orlando, man, there wasn't nothing there, Jack. I mean, my father used to kid that it was a wide spot in the road. That's what my father called Orlando. It was a little town in the middle of Florida, and they had just built this thing called Disney World, which was this monstrosity of an entertainment complex right next to this sleepy burg that had nothing going for it. I mean, it had a beautiful little town, as far as beautiful little towns go. I mean, there's some that are more beautiful, others that are not quite, but they had, you know, Orlando had its charming places, but you ain't going to go there and party. And all of a sudden with Disney World, boom, everything starts to take off. Now, at the time, I was hanging out with people who were my age. You know, I started in Florida in radio when I was 19, so I'm hanging out with other 19-year-olds, and they were going to either Florida... When they were, you know, graduating from high school, they were either going to Florida, or a lot of them were going out to this new campus called the University of Central Florida. And back then, it was just a middle-sized school. It wasn't anything. I don't even think they had a football team.
What about like the Tangerine Bowl and everything like that?
The Tangerine Bowl existed, but it wasn't a bowl. It was like one big grandstand and a little tiny grandstand. And that with two grandstands facing each other with a really cheap-looking scoreboard. And right next to it was a minor league baseball field where the Orlando Twins played. And that was it. And so the years roll by. And as I was in town doing my thing in radio, I was there for about maybe 2-3 years. You saw things starting to get bigger, and there was these bond proposals floated, and hey, why don't we build the stadium bigger, and oh, we, you know, they're going to get a pro football team in Tampa, what about Orlando, blah, 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 all this bull crap. And the next thing you know, man, I move out of town, and I move on with my life, and I turn around. The first big news I heard out of Florida was a kid out of Orlando was a kid by the name of Houston McTeer. Does anybody know this name?
I know that's the kid who broke the world record.
That's exactly right. This kid in like 1979, 1980, 81, I forget the year, broke the world 100-meter record. A high school guy out of Eatonville High. I think he was going to Eatonville High School. And I may be wrong, I think he ran in bare feet.
Well, that's that, you know, that, oh, the barefoot country boy thing. How do you know that's true?
I don't know. I thought I read that.
You probably thought you read it on account of everything's rustic.
Yeah.
Everything's rustic. No, it ain't that rustic. It was, you know, it's a city, but nonetheless, you're right. It was Eatonville High, which was a very small and very rather poor high school. But nonetheless, this kid made national, he made world news, and it was out of Orlando, Florida. But as the times changed and went on, next thing you know, they got this pro basketball team there. The Magic came to town, and now this University of Central Florida, this thing's a monster.
It's a big school.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just took a look online at their campus and the football stadium. Good Lord, who would have known? Who would have thought? So it's a major school, and there they are ranked in the top 25 of college football teams, 6-1. And, you know, I wonder, did they play Alabama?
I'm going to look right now. I don't know if they did. They played, here are the teams. They Akron, FIU, Penn State, South Carolina, Memphis, Louisville, Connecticut. What?
Those are cheap schools, man. How do they get ranked on that?
Well, they're 19, man, so it ain't like nobody's making them number one. But, yeah, they're playing some funky Akron. FIU, what's that?
Florida International.
Florida International. Penn State, South Carolina, Memphis, Louisville's ranked. Louisville's, let's see, 1, 2. They only played two ranked teams out of all of them. Anyway, there you go, University of Central Florida. Maybe they make a lot of these southern teams. Maybe they rank a lot of these southern teams because they know it's a, you know, football is king in the South, and they don't want to piss off any of the alumni there. Anyway.
Well, I don't know. I do know the alumni at a lot of those southern schools. They're quite into their football. Very charming people. I had the great fortune, Frank and I, to be at a Alabama alumni party during one of their football games a number of years ago. Very charming, very wealthy, very wealthy, very moneyed men.
All right, that's good for you, Margaret.
Well.
Anyway, we'll be back here with Coach Dozier. Vernon Dozier is going to be with us, and he is going to be talking to us about how he views these college football rankings. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
Come on.
Here you go, Margaret.
Oh, this, I love this song. This is do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Oh, I love it. Do-do-do-do-do.
Let's go, girls.
Hi, everyone. This is Margaret Gray. I love this song. This is called Feel Like... Now, I have the lyrics here. Do you want me to
I'm
sing?
Going out tonight.
Go ahead.
Hold on for a minute. You've got to start it again.
Do,
do, do, do. Yeah.
Wanna make some noise.
Really raise my voice. Yeah, I want to scream and shout. No inhibitions. Yeah, girls.
This song sucks.
Turn it off, bud. The song sucks.
It does. It just sucks.
You know something, Phil? I'm glad I'm not a man. You guys have no fun. You have no idea what it is to be a woman and to feel it. You know?
Well,
I know what it is to feel a woman, though. Ow!
Don't say that. You know she's going to belt you.
You better believe next time I'll bring something heavier.
That means a gun. That was on Sopranos.
No, it doesn't mean a gun.
It means a bag full of ball bearings.
Why do you hesitate?
Because I was afraid I was going to say the F word. Anyway, I'm going out tonight. I'm feeling all right. Gonna let it all hang out. Wow, wow, wow. Wanna make some noise. Really raise my voice. Yeah, I wanna scream and shout. See, that's what I do, Phil, and I think that's a signature move of mine, and a lot of people are copying it now. Everyone loves to do the multitude of notes, the falsetto. I pioneered that along with the young lady from the Steels, the gal that sang, I am falling you. You remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Beautiful song, isn't it?
Yes, it is a beautiful, from Baghdad Cafe, yeah. Javetta Steele.
Javetta Steele, that's the woman, excuse me.
God, Margaret, just put this table in.
I said, excuse me. So what I like to do is the same thing. I'm gonna go out. I'm feeling all right. Do do do. See? And then we hit the big note. The best thing about being a woman is the prerogative to have a little fun. Is that?
Yeah, those really the lyrics?
I don't remember those at all.
The prerogative to have a little fun. What's that mean?
Well, you got the right to have fun.
Everybody knows they got the right. This is America.
Yeah, I know, but she's just singing that. All right, let's forget about that.
Oh, yeah, let's just forget about that.
Well, Margaret, do you want to keep singing it?
I would like to give people, because I'm going to do this weekend at the Kangaroo.
Oh, I thought you were doing the adult set.
Well, it's not all going to be adult. I'm going to go out. I'm feeling all right. Going to let it all hang out. Let's see. I want to make some noise. Really raise my voice. Oh, yeah, right here. Yeah, I want to scream and shout about. No inhibitions. Make no conditions. And then right here. Get a little out of line. See?
Well, I mean, it sounds like it ought to work.
You know, you don't lie very...
I'm not lying. It sounds like it ought to work. All right, Vernon Dozier joining us here on our newsmaker line. Our number of 855-500-7445. Of course, you can join in with us here. And Vernon is joining us from Glendale, California. Looking at the top 25, Vernon, had a lot of very interesting conversations off air and on with the crew here about the rankings.
Well, the rankings in college football are controlled, Phil, by the computer, BCS is, I should say. The other rankings, and I've got, I think I see it behind you as well, you have the other rankings, our AP, and those are both mostly controlled by the coaches.
Well, I'm looking at the Legends poll, the Harris poll. They'll give you your choice, but I'm looking at the AP Top 25.
Yeah, the AP Top 25 is going to be football writers and coaches. The BCS standings, obviously, those are the computer, as Margaret and the other folks, you guys are kidding around, call it the mother-father computer. Well, you know, in a way, I think you need to respect that this is a computer, Phil, that has been fed and programmed with all of the pertinent information that college football has to offer. And that is everything from statistics of individual players to statistics of the overall offensive, defensive performance of the team, special team performance, the team's histories, the team's tendencies, and so on and so forth. So, you know, I don't want to get too over the top here, but this is a very, very, very sophisticated computer, and I don't blame you for joking. I suppose you can, but please keep in mind that for some of us, it is how we live our lives. And
what do you mean by that?
Yeah, when you say how you live your lives,
well, this is football is my life, but the computer, the BCS computer, is the arbiter of the very blood, if you will, of that life. The blood of the life that I live is the football team, the players, the records, and the actual life, if you will. If for instance, and I'm not making a comparison here, so please understand, but if the life of Christianity is the life of Jesus Christ, then the life of college football is the very living tissue of the college football game.
Well, when you say living tissue, Coach, that's the part that's...
It sounds almost, I don't know, reverentially, you know, religious.
No, it's not religious. No, but what it is, it's not religious, but it is reverential, and it is something that we do not joke about for fear that the computer itself is going to deliver information that we are not going to, that's not really going to uplift our lives. In fact, well, so we talk about the BCS computer in the way that one would talk about anything that has that kind of that provides the life that we have. See, I've got a good life. I'm not saying anything bad. I've got a great life. And why do I have a great life? It's what you all were joking when you said the mother-father computer. It's not the mother-father computer. The BCS computer is the life. It is the life in the blood.
Gee, that sounds like Jesus.
No, it's not Jesus. No.
Well, it does. I think Bud's right. It's when you said the life in the blood.
No. I'm saying that the BCS computer is our. It is our sacrament. If you want to call it a religion, it's not religious. Okay.
All right. If it's not religious, then don't use a religious term like sacrament. What would you call it?
Well, I would call it. Then I would call it the Mother Father. I would call it the Arbiter. I would call it the. I would call it the Patriarch. It is the Patriarch. It is the Mater Pater. It is Mater and Pater.
Wait, are you saying pay dirt?
No, I'm saying Pater.
Mater Pater, as in Matriarch Patriarch.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's the BCS computer for myself, for college football coaches, for college football players, and more importantly, for college football fans. The BCS computer is a tool that we look to, that we have our faith, that we put our faith in, that we are confident, because we know that it cares for us. And again, I don't want to be religious, as Phil said, but I know that when I get up in the morning, there is a, I don't want to call it love because it's a machine, but I feel as if I've got something going with it, you know.
What? What do you mean you got something going with it?
Hold on. I'm not.
Well, that sounds rather.
I've got to tell you, Coach Robert, you know, it sounds like when you say about a girl, you know.
No. When you talk about a girl, I got something going with a girl. You're talking about you're going steady with her. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that the BCS computer, as a football coach, I have a personal relationship, as we all do, with the BCS computer. And by that I mean I can look at those stats and I get something out of it. Another coach looks at them, he gets something else out of it. But I feel like the BCS computer and I have how do I put this? We've got something going on, you know, and it feels right.
Well, that sounds. I don't know what you mean by it feels right.
No, you got to get your mind, Phil, as my father used to say, and I don't mean that literally to you, but, you know, get your mind out of the gutter.
Well, why wouldn't, when you say that you have something going with the BCS computer and it feels right...
That's not a gutter thing. It's what I've got with the BCS computer is far above the gutter. Understand that, please.
Well, Vernon...
No, hold on, Margaret. Please understand and give me some respect. And give the BCS computer... the respect you give a computer, not a human, but I'm saying what I've got going with the BCS computer is not a gutter thing at all, and I'm very offended. I treat that computer, if I could, I would treat it with, it would not be a filthy, dirty, I don't think in filth terms. Some coaches may think of the BCS computer and think of filthy, dirty things to do to it. I don't.
What are you talking about, Coach? I mean, are you talking about...
What am I talking about? I'm sitting there. Am I talking to myself?
What, when you're talking about the BCS computer ranking football teams and games, what do you mean you got something going with it and the other coaches may have filthy, dirty thoughts about it?
I didn't say they've got filthy, dirty... I said that the other coaches look at the BCS computer... like it's some kind of a filthy thing that will do anything they ask it to do. And it won't. It takes the information. It's a truthful computer. I believe that it tells the truth. I believe that it doesn't just... I know it sounds like sex, but... And it's not. But at the same time, I get angry if I think about that computer just sticking it out there for... You know, just any coach, and I know it's hard for you to understand that.
Well, yeah, it's you got to hold on here, okay? Because I got to take a break.
Yeah, but you're leaving me hanging, looking like a.
I got to take a break, Coach. I'll be right with you here. Everything he's saying makes me more nervous and more nervous and more nervous. We'll be right back here with more from Coach Vernon Dozier, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Hey, Hey, welcome back. World famous Phil Henry Show. PhilHenryShow.com. What camera are we on here? And if you're watching us on Phil TV in HD, you can see behind me there are the rankings of the college football teams across the country. Number one is Alabama. Number two, Florida State. Number three, Oregon. Number four, Ohio State. Five is Stanford. Six is Baylor. Seven is Clemson.
You say Baylor with a surprise.
Well, Baylor, it's been a while since, and again, you're listening here tonight, folks, not that you haven't guessed this already, to a guy who's not the most well-versed when it comes to college football, but some of these teams are, you know, Missouri and Baylor I never thought of as having big-time programs, so they're there, Auburn and Oklahoma, and then Miami and places like that. Now, Miami was ranked seventh. They got their ass handed to them by Florida State. On the line with us is Coach Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. Coach Dozier has coached at the professional level as well as the college level. He's now a head football coach there at Belmar, which is a CIF, a high school program. Coach, do you buy Alabama as number one?
No, I do not. And for the very reasons that you just gave, you mentioned that Alabama has, I think they've got a schedule that in areas is super soft. And the same thing with some of these opponents of theirs. You're looking at the SEC teams. Tennessee has played some real weird nowhere teams. And I think the team that's number one in the nation right now is Florida State. I think what they did to Miami, Miami should forever feel disgraced by that. I think what was done to Miami, I wouldn't want any child of mine to know about it. If I had been a part of that team, I would certainly not want my wife to know about it. Because
well, what happened to Miami? My God, it sounds like there was a sexual assault.
Well, I mean, no. What I'm saying is Miami was
Miami got their ass kicked. I mean, it was a beating. Like, I don't think anybody really, well, maybe they did. Anybody that knows anything about college football probably was expecting something along those lines. But Miami lost 41-14 to Florida State last weekend. Miami was ranked seventh in the country. But look, here is another example. Look at Miami's schedule. Savannah State, 77-7. That's not even, Coach, you know, tell me, man, that's not a big time college football program.
What, Miami?
No, Savannah State.
Oh, no. Savannah State and South Florida. And look, some of these ball clubs, you wonder what they're thinking. I understand that they schedule some of these teams, as you were saying, Phil, to give these ball clubs a big gate, to let some of these little tiny schools have a big team on their schedule to bring the fans out. It's a lot of fun. So it benefits the small school. It benefits the big school, but don't make any mistake about it. When you beat a Savannah State 77-7, you might as well throw that game out. And I think to that end, I think you'll find that the BCS computer that I've been talking about here, that you've questioned its validity, and I have to ask you to just remember who you're talking to when you talk to me or you talk to other football coaches and people who adhere to the college football rankings of the BCS. Have some respect for us and understand that the BCS computer is something that is integral to not only my life, but it's integral to the man that I am.
See, here we go again, you know.
What does that mean, here we go again, you know?
Well, we're talking about a computer, Coach. We're not talking about...
You're talking about that computer, Coach Dozier, as if it is Jesus Christ.
Excuse me, ma'am. No, I am not. I have not attributed that. That's very offensive.
Well, you're talking about it as if it's some sort of religious totem of some kind.
No, ma'am. I have said, no, ma'am, I've not attributed God status to that computer, nor have I said it's performed any kind of an act that you or I would think is unusual.
Well, okay, now see, I'm hearing you kind of qualify something.
Yeah, it sounds almost like you don't want to say it did a miracle, but maybe it did.
No, I didn't say that at all. I feel ganged up on here.
Well, I'm not trying to do that, Coach, because I honestly don't. I want to talk strictly about the rankings, but you got this BCS computer. You said something before the break that we were talking about. You said the BCS computer, you got a thing going on.
Okay, look, I'm not a joke, all right, and I'm not going to be brought on your national radio show, so let's parade Coach Dozier on a Friday night because the football games are this weekend and make him look like a hole.
Look, Coach, I'm not doing that. I apologize, okay?
Well, what's with the laugh?
You said that you felt that you and the BCS computer had an understanding.
Yes, I did say that.
Okay. And it bordered on...
No, it did not border on sex. Because, as I said, I have too much respect for the BCS computer. You know, let me say this, Phil, okay? Yes, there are those of us who are fortunate enough to understand how that computer works and what it ultimately wants in this world, this crazy world of ours, and we have enough respect for it that we're biding our time until, you know... I'm not saying too much because I don't know whether I have a sympathetic audience here.
What are you talking about, biding your time?
See, that's what I mean right there, Dickman. You should not have let him speak. Because when I hear his voice, I get frightened. I want to go into a bomb shelter somewhere when I hear him.
Coach, let's not blame this on Bud. Continue your thought. You said you'll be honest with us what?
I'm saying that the BCS computer is something that I have great respect for, and I'm not going to disrespect it with filthy thoughts that I know a lot of other coaches have. And I know coaches are thinking about the BCS computer in the most filthy and disrespectful ways, like the BCS computer is there sticking its, you know... I don't know how to say this to you, because I don't want to come across sounding like I like pornography, but can you imagine a BCS computer parking it on a guy? It makes me angry, that's all.
And parking what?
Parking what?
Coach, it's a computer, man. It's a computer.
Oh, yeah, okay, man. All right, man. I'm sorry, man. I didn't know that it was computer, man.
Coach, he's not trying to be some hippie. I know you hate hippies. That's just how Phil talks.
No, I know that's how he talks. That's why I'm, you know, sort of moderately amused that I'm kind of humoring him.
You're humoring me. You just got done saying that the BCS computer parks at something or other.
Well, three guesses.
How about this? It's ass?
Well, you said a BCS computer is parking its ass.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
What do you think?
What do I think? I think he's working too hard. I think that guy is stretched too thin. I think he needs to take some time off, you know.
Well, he's a high school coach, Phil.
Hey, let me tell you something. Those high school coaches work every bit as hard as the pro guys and the college guys, and the high school guys have other jobs they got to do. Some of those guys, like Coach Dozier there, he's the social sciences teacher. He also is the senior class advisor. He's the varsity football coach. He also coaches baseball. I mean, he's got a million other things he's doing. And they live just like any other football coach with the game film and with the game plan, and I think he's nuts. I think he's...
Well, I mean, you know, it could go either way.
Go either way? Hey, I got a thing with the BCS computer that these other coaches don't respect, and they think in filthy thought...
They think what?
They're think. You heard him. They think filthy thoughts about the BCS computer. In other words, it's almost like the BCS computer is Vernon's sister. World famous Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com. Back with our final hour of the show here tonight on this Friday night. In a minute. Woo-hoo. Famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch. There's radio, and then there's the Phil Henry Show. Well. Yeah. By the way, Margaret Gray tomorrow night at the Kangaroo out in Fontana. She'll be singing an adult set that's fun, just so we let people know. But you are going to do Feel Like a Woman.
Man, I Feel Like a Woman. That's the name of the song, and it's the Shania Twain song. And I love Shania Twain. I don't know what's happened to her. I don't know where she is or what she's doing. God knows. If anyone knows, I don't know if the local police or...
What do you mean the local police? What are you talking about?
I don't know where she is. Do you?
No, but I don't follow Shania Twain. Don't get people scared.
I'm not getting anyone scared. I'm sure she's fine, but... I don't know where... Does she sing? What does she do?
I heard where she's not even... I heard some guy stole money from her and everything like that.
What are you people talking? Would you get your fact? Don't say anything unless you know for a fact. Do you understand? First of all, you do a grave disservice to that person. And secondly, and more importantly, you could get me sued.
Well, that's all you care about you getting sued.
You better believe it. You better believe it, man. That's numero uno on the list of things that I don't want to have happen around here. Misinforming the public? I'll take my chances. Now then.
Oh, that's just fine and dandy.
Well, take it easy. I'm partially kidding. But not always, you know, I mean... Or I shouldn't say not all the way.
In other words, you're saying that you'd rather misinform people.
I'm saying, given a choice between me getting some bad information out there and being sued, I'd rather get the bad information out there. You want to know why? Because the audience can take care of themselves. They can, you know, they're all grown-ups out there, man.
Well, how do you know that?
Well, there's enough adults listening. They can do their own research and figure out their own stuff. Charlie Sheen is going nuts over a judge's decision to give Brooke Mueller's brother Scott guardianship of their twins and then allowing her brother and the kids to live at her house, a house Charlie owns.
Well, Charlie, welcome to the world of no prenup.
There you go. Don't you think this cat... He didn't have one, huh?
Well, it doesn't sound to me like he had a prenuptial agreement. He should have had one.
What Charlie is telling friends is, quote, choice, so it just can't be paraphrased. Here it goes. This is reporting TMZ. This is what Charlie is saying to friends about this decision to give Brooke Mueller's brother Scott guardianship of their twins and then allows Brooke Mueller's brother Scott and the kids that he has guardianship over to live at her house, and that house Charlie owns. Now, why would the judge...
Phil, don't second-guess anything you don't have complete information on.
You're right. That's a very good point. But it does, on the surface, sound goofy. The judge giving...
Don't second-guess anything that...
Will you let me finish, please? It sounds weird that the judge is giving guardianship to the brother, not to the mother, but then the brother and the kids that he has guardianship over, they get to live in the mother's house.
Yeah, that Charlie Sheen owns.
Well, that's not germane, whether he owns it or not. That's got nothing to do with what I'm trying to say here.
Why not?
Because it's got nothing to do... That's why not. It's got nothing to do with what I'm trying to say.
Phil, you just went... Nobody understood you.
Yeah, it sounded like yodeling in the canyon.
How dare you...
Hey,
watch it, will you?
You can't say that.
What'd you say, bud?
Yodel in the canyon.
Why don't you watch your language, okay?
Why does Margaret know what it means?
I don't know what it means, but the way you darted your tongue out, I finally figured it out.
Yeah. Anyway.
What does that mean?
Yeah. In other words, don't fool me into thinking you don't know something that you do know. The circus... Here's what Charlie Sheen said.
Can we get someone who reads the English language?
Give me that. The pig circus overflowing with buffoons, sycophants, and heretics cannot be trusted to safely raise a colony of ferrets. That's what he calls his wife, a former wife, Brooke, or his former mate, Brooke, or whatever the hell she is, and Scott, and I guess the judge. He calls it a pig circus overflowing with buffoons, sycophants, and heretics. They cannot be trusted to safely raise a colony of ferrets. Well, ferrets are not easy to raise, you know, so I don't know what he means by that.
Well, he's saying that for sure don't give them ferrets.
Yeah.
For sure don't give them, because he cares about ferrets?
Well, if they're not easy to raise, he would say, well, don't give them the ferrets to raise.
Yeah, that's what he's saying, but I think he assumes that ferrets are easy to raise, and they're not easy to raise.
Well, how do you know?
Well, because because ferrets, aren't those the ones that... Oh, meerkats, that's what I'm thinking of.
Larry?
The meerkats, the ones on the... So anyway, he says, Brooke will fail and her brother, who lives by the beach, will be selling his ass under a pier and the evil nanny will die from ugly. Wow.
Get a load of the pear on him. Charlie, and I know Charlie Sheen. I've known him for... Well, I've known him off and on.
You know Charlie Sheen?
Off and on.
Why don't you get him on the show?
I don't know him that well.
Well, how well do you know him?
I've seen him around... Don't worry, Phil.
Seen him around town.
I didn't say around town. I've seen him around... Charlie, I'm talking to you right now, and I want to say this as a friend, as a confidant, and as one who cares about your future. I think you've got a sewer for... You've got to clean it up, Charlie. Clean it up. Bring in a crew if you have to clean it up. But get it cleaned. Buff to a high sheen, if you will, as I've often said to him.
Buff to a high sheen.
Yes, buff to a high... Yes, Phil. Charlie, remember the conversations we had about you buffing it to a sheen? This is what I meant. You thought I was kidding when I used your last name in that little play on words. But I really want to see you get that thing buffed to a gloss. A sheen gloss, if you will. Number two. This woman, whether she is a slut or whether she is simply an opportunist, whether she is this or whether she's that, Charlie, doesn't matter. She's the mother of your twins. And these twins obviously look alike. And they look like you. That means you've got a lot of representation out there. Miniature, what doesn't make any difference. People are going to see you when they see the two of these going down the street. And when they're old enough, with no adult...
No. Yeah?
I don't know it.
That didn't make any sense.
It was making sense in my mind. Thank you.
Well, it didn't make any sense to the rest of us. They're going to be going down the street.
Don't you understand that there are twins that look exactly like him? So you've got Charlie Sheen, and now you've got two more. And if one of them's a girl, oh, baby.
Well...
What's with the laughter?
If one of them's a girl, you know, what, she's going to look like Charlie?
Yes.
Well, she'll be a female version of Charlie, which will make her a female, which means she's got a pretty even chance of looking very beautiful, because look at her mother. Her mother's gorgeous, you know.
Well, the mother is okay. You know, do you see the scar on the cheek?
What scar on her cheek? That's hair.
Oh.
All right, so Charlie Sheen made those comments. To add insult to injury, Brooke is living in the same gated community as Charlie. As we first reported, the judge's decision effectively gives Brooke full immediate custody of the troubled twins with a babysitter brother. I don't get how the judge says that the brother can have guardianship, though. Why not just give the guardianship, the custody to the mother? And then they can... It's weird. It's getting weirder and weirder and weirder. Tom Cruise likens his career as an actor to a soldier away from his family while in Afghanistan. And Cruise says, yes, Scientology drove Katie and his daughter, Suri, away from him. Scientology effectively broke up his family. Tom Cruise said that. How about that? World-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Online, we are at philhendryshow.com with the nightly video cast as well as a broadcast of our show. And you can also get the podcast of our show the next day at philhendryshow.com. You can get a classic podcast as well. It comes from the archives, 5,000 hours worth of archives of the Phil Hendry Show. And, of course, we have our Bobby Dooley podcast. We have webisodes, we have episodes, we have weba episodes. It's nonstop, ongoing, all kinds of miscellany, all kinds of historical, marvelously historical artifacts there on our website as well. So we encourage you to visit philhendryshow.com. And while there, visit our online store and pick up any one of a number of marvelous things. We'll be right back here with the Tom Cruise thing, Margaret commenting, and Bobby Dooley on the Phil Hendry Show. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. And at the end of January, we're going to be at the San Francisco Sketch Fest. This is going to be a rollout of my one-man show.
Now, this is the one-man show you've been promising.
Yes, I've been promising and putting off and promising and putting it. It's going to happen, and we're going to roll it out on January 26th at the San Francisco Sketch Fest. And when I say that, I have no idea how much time we will have on stage. I don't have any real idea, but it's a fantastic festival, all kinds of marvelous, not just stand-up comics, but people that do sketch humor, people that do, like the kind that I do, which has got nothing to do with stand-up comedy, people doing a variety of different performances having to do with comedy. The San Francisco Sketch Fest, the 26th, I'll be there. It lasts for weeks. is my understanding. It sounds like a blast, and I think I'll make a weekend out of it, you know, drive up there.
Well, I was going to say, are you taking an airplane?
Yeah, you, Derek's going to fly you up.
I think I'll drive, and, you know, just take my time and hang out. I don't know what I'll do. Maybe I'll fly.
Well, that's very clear.
Well, what difference does it make?
In case people want to meet you at the airport, have a crowd of people, you know what you do? Let me tell you something, Phil.
Not going to be a crowd of people.
No, but this is what you do. You have to start thinking the way most performers think. You've got to hire people to walk up to you and, oh, Mr. Hendry, and get your autograph. You see? And that way, people go, oh, who's he? Well, he's Phil Hendry. And they'll go, oh. And people are asking for your autograph. You know?
Yeah, you gotta hire some people.
I ain't gonna do that. That sounds like such a hassle. What's that gonna do, anyway?
Well, a lot of people look at that, man. Like a movie producer, see that, go, I'm gonna get that guy in my movie. Look at all the fans he's got.
Get out of here. You know, you know how ashamed I'd be to do something like that? No way.
Ashamed? There are a lot of very prominent people that do that. So when you get off the plane, people will... And think of how good that is, because there's all these people in the airport... And then suddenly you have about 10 or 15 people running up to you and, oh, Mr. Henry, can I have your autograph? It's so great to have you here in the Bay Area. Blah, 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 blah. I'd do it if I were you.
Yeah, I know, and...
And what does that mean?
I know that that's the way you think, that that's the kind... You think that kind of stuff is valuable. I don't. You know, I just don't think it's valuable.
You don't think it's valuable? Wow.
Man, I don't know, Mr. Henry. You're going to miss that boat.
Yeah, if I miss that boat, I'll catch the next boat, man. Okay?
Missed that boat.
What are you laughing at?
You nuts or something, man. He's gonna look like he's gonna look like six different kinds of jackass if he pulls something like that.
You don't know what you're talking about. I'm talking about professional stuff.
Hold on for a minute. Can I tell you something? I saw that happen once. I forget, Maria and I were out when I was married, and we just come across the street from the Team America premiere. That was it. And we went into this nightclub, and we were having cocktails and you know, and partying and all that stuff. And one of the people that was there, one of the people that had been invited to the party, she was an actress, I don't know her name, and she wasn't in the movie, but there were a lot of people that were there that were, invited to go to this party. So one of them was this actress. And she stood there on this red carpet line, and there was a crowd of maybe there were four or five or six people standing there, and she was signing autographs for them. And meanwhile, there was a guy there holding photographs for these people to take and get her to sign it. And it was the phoniest looking thing, you know.
Well, she should have had more than four or five people.
Well, I don't know, but it was just the phoniest looking thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I looked at it, I went, oh, are they serious with that? You know.
Well, how do you know? It might have been real.
Well, let me ask you something, if it was real.
Yeah, it could have been real, Mr. Henry.
Wait, well, okay, let's just think about this for a second. It's real, huh? So the guy shows up with her, whoever that is, a publicist or a manager or something, and he's holding these photographs, and she's going to stand there and sign autographs?
Well, no, she's going into the party.
She's going into the party with a stack of photographs?
Yes.
The only people in that party are other professional people. They're nice people. They're not about to ask each other for autographs. Boy, that'd be kind of weird, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, they probably anticipated that there would be a mob of people, you know.
They anticipated there'd be a mob of people, so how come there wasn't?
Was it raining?
No, it wasn't raining. The weather was fine. I'm telling you, it was a phony baloney thing. It was designed to make her look... This is exactly what you guys are talking about, isn't it?
I'm talking about if you had five or six people show up at the San Francisco airport with all of those other people there, it would look like a real mob scene.
Yeah, man, it'd probably look like a rock band or something showing up.
Oh, you guys are high on narcotics. Are you crazy? Are you not? I wouldn't do that. You couldn't pay me to do something like that. No way. No, thank you.
Just because you saw some little actress signing autographs.
It was pathetic, man. There was nobody else around. There was four people there. Her agent or whoever is handing out these pictures. It was the most contrived thing I ever saw in my life. So I'm just telling you, that's what I saw, and I'm sticking to my story. I hope that girl found great success. I'm serious. I'm being very serious. I hope she found success, and I hope that she's doing well. You know, but that was not, I wouldn't call that a high point of her efforts to, you know, promote herself.
Well, I want to talk about the Tom Cruise thing, and I know that this does have an awful lot to do with the Scientology and so forth. And to that end, I wanted to bring on Father James McQuarters. Is that possible?
Do you have his number, bud?
No, I got Father McQuarters on the line, but we want to make sure it's okay with you, just in case, you know.
Yeah, it's fine with me.
I want to get on Father James McQuarters. He's a Roman Catholic priest, as you all know, because we were just at Belmar Academy, and Father McQuarters is one of the religious prelates, one of the clerics up there. Father McQuarters, how are you?
Well, Margaret, I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on the Phil Henry Show. I take it, are you going to be hosting the show now?
No, I'm hosting this segment, sort of, with Phil's here, too.
Father McQuarters, how you doing?
I'm fine, Phil. I was hoping that Margaret will interview me. Of course, I love Margaret, and I love all the questions that she'll ask. But I also know that it's your program, right?
Well, she's doing a thing here on Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise's deposition in a lawsuit that he's filed against some magazines for defamation, but the deposition has to do with Scientology.
Okay, Scientology, yes, yes. Fascinating group of people they are, aren't they?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, Father McQuarters. What do you think of them?
Well, I think that there's good and bad in all people, and I think that they're getting into a game that's a tough game. It's a tough game. And what I mean by that is, if you want to be a religion, and you want to start a religion, you look at the Catholic Church, and look at the long history of the Catholic Church, and you see all the things the Catholic Church has survived down through the years, and down through the millennium, and you ask yourself, why would you want to let yourself in for something like this, right? But start a religion, they have done. And they apparently, as I heard Phil say, they've got their tax-exempt status.
Do you talk to Scientologists, Catholics? Do you talk to people?
No. Catholics are not about to admit to a Catholic priest that they believe in Scientology. Now, I can tell you that I've long suspected one or two of the people that I see coming to the church on a Sunday afternoon. And I've long suspected some of them. As having some sort of bizarre belief like this, you know.
Well, which ones would you suspect?
Well, I don't know. The ones that you suspect would be the ones. I heard the reference to Margaret, the thousand-yard stare. And so I think that...
Here we go again with this thousand-yard stare. What is that?
The thousand-yard stare, Phil, is something that we first notice in our combat veterans. The combat veterans have the thousand-yard stare. They look down the... downrange, always looking downrange. They're looking further downrange than you or I. They're looking downrange to see where the enemy is. They're looking downrange to see where the next attack is coming from. They got the 1,000 yards there. And the 1,000 yards there is simply that level of a sentry kind of mentality.
It's like being on guard all the time.
Exactly. It's like being on guard all the time. But you look down to see the 1,000 yards there. Well, that's the same thing that I think the Scientologist has. He has that thousand-yard stare where he's looking down range, and he's waiting for Zeno to show up. Now, Zeno is from another planet, and I can't say that I believe in any of this, but this is the liturgy of the Scientology Church. And I think a lot of the Scientologists are looking down range waiting for Zeno.
Zeno, and you say that with a straight face.
I have all the respect in the world for religions, the world religions. I don't disrespect any of them, Phil.
All right, hold on, Father James McQuarters, who says that he suspects that there are some people in his congregation there at Belmar Academy who may be, even though they're Catholics, may be practicing Scientology because they have the thousand-yard stare. So here we go again with that.
Oh, not here we go again with that, Phil. The thousand-yard stare, as Father said... they're looking to see if Zeno is...
Yeah, see if Zeno's going to show up. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
You shouldn't disrespect it.
Get out of here. Hold on. Father, we'll be back in a couple minutes, okay?
I understand. I'm just waiting for Zeno. I'm just kidding.
world-famous Phil Hendry Show, back here with Father James McQuarters as we talk about Scientology. Although that's not really what we wanted to talk about, Father McQuarters. We wanted to talk about Tom Cruise and the comment that he made in a deposition. And I'm sorry, Morgan, if I'm taking this over.
No, that's all right. You have the background. But Father McQuarters, now that we've given you basically the background is the deposition. And he said that Scientology forced Katie Holmes to run, to leave him and take the daughter with her.
Well, I think that Tom Cruise opting for the Scientology as opposed to opting for the family, I find that to be quite unusual. I don't know what religion would make a man leave his family, although we've seen the cults and the different cults that cause people to do crazy things. You know, we've seen these different cults from time to time. Saw that with the Jim Jones cult, you know, Phil, years ago.
Right. I mean, there were people leaving family behind.
Yes, they did. They left their families behind, and they left their businesses, left the people that they love, and they went down to South America, some godforsaken hellhole, and they listened to this raving lunatic as he sweated his days away and topped speed and took all kinds of shots for vitamin shots and this and that. And then later on in the middle of the night, he'd crawl out of his bunker complex down there into the pavilion area, this Jim Jones, I believe is his name, and he began to spew all kinds of crazy things, insane things, made the people scared, made them fear for their lives. And so finally, one day, he brought out the Kool-Aid that they purchased in town in Georgetown there at a supermarket, and they got millions or thousands or whatever it was of these packets of Kool-Aid, and just worked overtime all night long, had people tearing open these packs of Kool-Aid to go into the big tubs, and they finally had the last pack, was torn open. And
but this specific stuff about how the Kool-Aid was made is, well, first of all, it wasn't Kool-Aid, it was Flavor-Aid.
That's right, it was Flavor-Aid. Have you ever had Flavor-Aid? I've had Flavor-Aid, and I loved Flavor-Aid. I thought Flavor-Aid was good, and I wouldn't go near the Flavor-Aid now. It's not Kool-Aid, it was Flavor-Aid. Phil's right.
Well, what difference does it make whether it's Kool-Aid or Flavor-Aid?
Well, first of all, you know, Kool-Aid kind of got a bad rap, you know. And it was probably Flavor-Aid, because Flavor-Aid's probably cheaper than Kool-Aid, do you think?
Well, I think that Flavor-Aid, it might be cheaper. I always loved Flavor-Aid. I always favored Flavor-Aid. I always loved the taste of Flavor-Aid. And I would say to them, those the kids, you know, when we'd have the softball tournaments and this kind of thing, I'd say to the boys, I always loved the Flavor-Aid. And they'd say, Father McQuarters, you should be the leprechaun and the lucky charm. I always have to be lucky charm. And I said, wouldn't I love that? You know, that'd be a big fat payday, but what the hell? But the Flavor-Aid was what they used. And this man, Jim Jones, gathered everyone into the pavilion area, and he said, it's time for us to drink the Flavor-Aid and split off the face of the earth. And he said, if you can't dig that, you need to split off the planet. And
You're not quoting him directly, are you?
No, I'm paraphrasing, but that's the kind of lunatic that he was, you know. He had that greasy hair, put on the sunglasses like he's some kind of a beatnik, and he sat there rocking back and forth high on the amphetamines that he'd been shooting into his veins, don't you know?
Well, do you know that for a fact that, I know that the man was using drugs, Father McQuarters. Do you know what kind?
Well, I suspect what he was taking was was speed, because he's always licking his lips. I've seen this with these junkies that come around Belmar and a lot of the church missions, and I used to work in the ghettos and down in the slums, you know. All the speed freaks licking their lips. So this is Jim Jones, and I think that this is what you have to be afraid of when you have a Scientology.
Okay, we're talking here with Father James McQuarters. Margaret, tell me what, and tell the Father what Tom Cruise said.
Well, Tom Cruise did admit to the fact that Scientology was the reason that his marriage to Katie Holmes did not work out. He did admit that she was frightened that their daughter, would be indoctrinated into Scientology, and as such, she said, I am leaving. So he admitted that much. The rest of the stuff in the deposition, I wouldn't say is all that negative about Tom Cruise's relationship with Scientology. I think he believes in it. But Father McQuarters brought a very good point up when he said that if your wife and your child were leaving you, is that worth it for a religion?
Well, look, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
What do you feel? Look, you're a raised Catholic, weren't you?
Yeah.
And you're a Jack Catholic now, aren't you, Phil? You can say it. You're a Jack Catholic.
Jack Catholic?
Yeah, Jack Catholic.
Yeah, I guess I am. People who don't know what that is.
What do you mean, people who don't know? You know, people that don't know what it is. A Jack Catholic is someone who was a Catholic, and now they're not the Catholic. They used to be Catholic, and now they're not.
They used to be Catholic, and now they're not.
No, you are still a Catholic, because you can't leave being a Catholic. You always have to be a Catholic, unless you're excommunicated. Which I don't think you have, then. Have you?
No, of course not.
All right. So that means that you're a Jack Catholic, which means you're a jackass. That's what I always say. You know,
okay, that's fine. What it means is I don't go to church regularly.
That's right. It means that you don't go to church regularly.
You talking about Jack Catholic being a jackass, Father?
That's what I said, Dickman. I thought it was a good little line. But to say that Phil is not a Catholic, would you leave Catholicism, Phil, for the Scientology?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I believe that you don't have to leave any religion. You can be anything you want to be.
Well, isn't that convenient?
Well, what do you think?
Well, I think that if you accept Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and you believe in the resurrection, and you believe in the light, and you believe in the blood of the Lamb, you certainly don't believe in another demigod like Xenu and the thousand-yard stare. And
well, this thousand-yard stare, Father, you have encountered this.
I encountered the thousand-yard stare in my church, yes. When I see these Scientologists, and they're waiting for Xenu to land his spaceship, that's what bugs me, and I'll never get over it. I'll never forget the look in their faces. And I'll say to them, have you been reading this man Hubbard? And they'll say, not so as you'd notice. And that's a tip-off to me that they have been. And I said, all right, you've been reading Hubbard? And they said, yes. And I said, I suppose it's too much to hope that you're reading old Mother Hubbard. And they go, ha-ha. And I said, thank you. And they'll say, yes, it is too much to hope. It's Ron Hubbard. It's L. Ron Hubbard. And I'll say, sweet Mother of Mary. And they'll say, Father, what's wrong? I'll say, you're reading a man who's daft. You're reading a man who's mad. The man's mad, you see.
Well, I imagine they're going to get defensive with that, right?
No, they do. They get very defensive. They say, no, he's not mad, Father. He's a brilliant man. He says, the man is daft. The man believes in Xenu. And I'll say, and the man believes that there's a Satan spirits in the world in a volcano. And they'll say, well, Father, you don't quite understand. And I'll say, what's to understand? You believe in Xenu, and you believe in these Satan spirits that all got thrown into a volcano. And they just, once they've been sucked in by that Xenu thing and the thousand-yard stare, forget it. What's so funny?
Just the way,
Well, Father, I think you said it very well that, Xenu and the Thetans and the volcanoes, yes, this is something that is either going to be taken seriously or it will be accepted as a sort of a necessary evil by those that are getting some help from Scientology, or there are people that will believe 100% in it.
Well, I don't know how you're going to get help by basically taking a lie detector test every 5 seconds, because that's exactly what it is. That's what that thing is. You're just taking a lie detector test.
Yeah, that's what they call auditing, right? Taking a lie detector test?
No, they call a lie detector test. I don't know. But
what I'm saying is that's what an audit is.
That's exactly what it is. But I don't want to go any further than that because there are people that I know, and you know, just as you were saying, I don't need these people hanging around here and bothering me. I don't want a bunch of Scientologists hanging around here looking as square as they do. Very humorless people trying to get up into my face, because I'll tell you something, Phil. I you know, I'll come back at them. I go natural. I'll bring a baseball bat. And I don't...
Okay, we had to dump out the end of that, and that's probably a good idea.
My God!
He got violent!
Yeah. This was supposed to be about Tom Cruise.
Well, yes, but everything about Tom Cruise is...
pretty much about Scientology.
Well, these days, yeah. That's a really good question he asked, you know. Would you leave a religion if it meant that you could, your wife and your kids would stay? It depends on the relationship you have with your wife and kids. It depends on what's more valuable. What's helping your life, I guess, you know. If your religion is doing it for you and your wife and kids, well, your kids, you can't leave your kids, you know.
No, and Tom Cruise made the point in the deposition he has not given up or abandoned his relationship with his daughter. He is still, nor financially or otherwise, so he's still very much in her life.
So it's all about just Katie.
Well, yes. It's a wife, and I suppose spouses come and spouses go.
Spouses come and spouses go. All right. That's that news story right there. We got other stuff to get to. One of these stories that I was reading here at the beginning of the show, or actually just before the show started, and we got into a little bit of it when, I forget, I forget who was on the program talking about it with us, but some canceled insurance policies were junk targeted by law. Was it David? Some canceled insurance policies were junk targeted by law. So that's what we're talking about. If you're worried about these insurance policies that have been canceled, you have to understand that these insurance policies were not meeting a legal, probably weren't even meeting the legal definition of what an insurance policy is. Here's an example of one. The Go Blue Health Services card, for which cancer survivor Donna Marie Palin of Newport Richey has paid $79 a month. For that, she gets $50 toward each primary care doctor visit, $15 toward each drug, but zero coverage for big-ticket items like hospital stays. And according to John McDonough, who worked on the law as a senior advisor to a key Senate committee and now serves as director of Harvard Center for Public Health Leadership, these are not really insurance policies. You put money in, but you don't get much back. And that's the name of that tune. All right, we'll be right back here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com, 855-500-7445. And online at philhendryshow.com. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. The world waits to see the powerful typhoon's devastation in the Philippines. Well, that was the headline 3 hours ago when we started the show, but I suppose it's still just as viable. Given the fact that the world is sort of checking in stages, in waves, not everybody is waking up or reading the news at the same time. As dawn broke Saturday in the Philippines, the devastation of Super Typhoon Haiyan, otherwise known as, what was the name they gave it?
What?
They gave it another name.
Yolanda.
Yolanda, that's it. Why would they give it Yolanda and the,
Well, there's a bunch of Western newsmen that don't, they're idiots.
A bunch of Western newsmen that aren't going to call it Haiyan.
I don't know. I'm finding it very hard to care about anything right now, other than the fact that Father McQuarters and the scientist. I don't know.
Is what?
I don't know.
What do you got on the phone there?
I've got Bozell on the phone, and he's bawling about something.
What is he bawling up? Stephen Bozell, who is does the play-by-play for our game of the week, is on the phone. What is going on, Steve?
I was just telling Margaret about it. I didn't want to go on the air. I just told him about the Candy Crush Sega.
No, but you were distracting me. I'm listening to this you're blathering.
I'm not blathering about anything. All I said was there's a new game called Jelly... it's called Jelly Squish or something. Jelly Splash or Jelly Squish.
Yeah, I know about that game.
Okay, you know about that game?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like I'm already wasting more time than I should by playing Candy Crush Saga.
Can we get people up to speed on what Candy Crush Saga is?
Yes, it's a game on Facebook that you play and you are crushing candy, and that's all I can tell you.
Yeah, it's just a virtual game that you play in the candy on the candy cane. Saga, okay.
And what's the name of it, Steve? You got a real problem, Mr. Bozell, giving me the correct information.
I'm sorry, it's called Candy Crush Saga.
Candy Crush.
Yes, sir.
Now, what do they got, a game called Jelly Squish?
It's called Jelly Splash, I think.
Yeah, it's Jelly Splash. It's the same kind of a game.
Yeah, well, that's just it. But here's the problem. I've been playing Candy Crush Saga now for... And again, Mr. Andrew, I'm not proud of myself. I consider... my tendency to play these games, to get these apps on my iPhone, to get the apps on my desktop computer, and to play the Candy Crush Saga, I consider that to be a character flaw. It's also a character flaw of mine that I have purchased lives. So you have to have lives to keep on playing.
Okay.
And you've gone ahead and purchased them?
I purchased them through Facebook. Yes, ma'am.
And what do you use, your credit card?
Well, yes, ma'am. You can't use cash.
No, I know, but you're giving your credit card information to Facebook.
Yes, I am. I'm giving my credit card information to Facebook.
And you don't sound to me like a guy that's happy about that.
No, I'm not happy about it. I'm very, very disappointed in the fact that's what's being done.
Yeah, but you did it.
Well, it's being done, and that's as far as I'm willing to go right now.
No, but he's right. You are the guy that did it.
I understand that that's the point that you want to make. I'm more than happy to consider that.
What's to consider, Steve? You're the one that made the decision.
No, I'm not arguing with you. I understand that. I just choose right now to give myself a little more latitude in that area. I feel what's happening now is it's being done to me. Maybe it's being done to me by a version of myself.
Well, whatever that means. All right, so what is the problem?
Well, the problem is that there's a new game now called Jelly Squish or something, and...
Can I say?
Go ahead.
It's called Jelly Splash.
Jelly Splash. It is just like Candy Crush Saga. Now, I feel that my life... And please forgive me, but I feel like my life is... I'm watching my life drain away from me. I'm watching my life just drain away from me. I don't think it's ever going to come back.
What? Why is your life draining away?
Because I'm on a Candy Crush Saga.
Because of Candy Crush Saga, yes, sir.
Are you playing it all the time?
All the free moments that I have, yes, sir. And now with Jelly Splash, which is just like Candy Crush Saga, only way more cheap and stupid looking. It's an obvious ripoff of the game. That's why I feel cheap and low. That I'm playing a game that's a ripoff of the other game that's an original. And I ask myself, why am I doing it, you know?
Why are you doing it? You know what I think about these games, okay? No, hold on. Here's what I think about all of these games. These games, like cigarettes, like booze, like Valium, like eating, all of these things are ways of us dealing with anxiety. I think that these games... help us avoid... Look, I heard a guy say one time that anxiety is standing at the door of the airplane with your parachute on. You know you have to jump, but you're walking in a circle. You're not ready to jump yet. You're just walking in a circle. You know you have to jump, but you're afraid to jump. You know you have to jump, you're afraid to jump. That's what anxiety is. It's a needless feeling because the sooner you jump and do what you got to do, the better everything's going to be. But instead, we walk in circles, and to help us deal with the feeling created by not committing to something that we need to commit to, we do games, we screw around on Facebook, we do all that stuff. So there's something in your life, man, that you're not dealing with.
Tell me about it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in my life I'm not dealing with, you know.
Well, like what? Name one thing.
I mean, you know, I gotta deal with my taxes.
Well, see, there you go. You got taxes you got to deal with. The end of the year's coming up, right?
Yeah, the end of the year's coming up, and I got to deal with my taxes. I got to deal with, you know, I'm on a diet too, Mr. Andrew. I got to deal with my weight, but I'm not quite, you know, getting out and exercising like I should.
There's all of these things are things that weigh on our minds, and we want to deal with them, and yet we're frightened to. I don't believe that there is such a thing as too lazy or bored. I think boredom is another word for fear. I think if you're bored, you're frightened to go and do something you need to do.
Well, now, where did you get all this wisdom? Because I think it makes sense.
Of course it makes sense. That's exactly what it is.
Well, how do you figure on Jelly Splash?
What do you mean, how do I figure on Jelly Splash?
Why, hold on for a minute.
What is wrong with you?
Why am I playing Jelly Splash on account of I'm also doing Candy Crush?
Because you're just going from one game to the next, man. You're going from one cure for anxiety to the next. You're trying to get rid of a feeling that you could get rid of if you just dealt with the crap that you got to deal with, man. If you dealt with your taxes, if you dealt with all of these things you say you got to deal with, you would get rid of that anxiety feeling, and you wouldn't be going from Candy Crush Saga to Jelly Squish.
Or it's called Jelly Splash.
Or Jelly Splash, whatever the hell it is. See what I'm saying?
I think that's very true, but I will say this. When Steve called up, he said that It was, you were talking about a religious thing.
Yeah, because I feel like, I don't know, Mr. Henry, I just feel like I'm headed straight on down. You know, I feel like I'm heading down to the hellhole. And the reason why I say I feel like I'm heading down to the hellhole is all the time I spend on the Candy Crush. Now that I'm on Jelly Splash, it's even a deeper part of hell.
Well, what? Don't worry about what hell you're heading for, man. Just start dealing with stuff, okay?
Well, what is that? Is that singing? It sounds like I'm in heaven now.
No, that's just music we're playing.
Oh, thank God.
All right, I'll tell you what. We'll talk to you off the air, and we'll see you guys on Monday. Have a great weekend. We love you. World famous Phil Henry Show.